The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We continue our discussions here this morning, looking at what our finance minister had to say to us. So we'll put these topics down and move on to others. And we're supposed to have 5 guests with us here this morning. We have 2 of them thus far. Let me say good morning to a gentleman who's joining us online. He's been with us before. That's Nicolai Edwards. Good morning to you, and nice to have you with us here this morning.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to the listeners from Trinidad and Tobago. Thanks for the opportunity to join in on the discussion.
And we have a gentleman who we've never had in studio before. We've spoken to because we've had discussions with persons from this organization. I've spoken to Louis Lee Singh, Karen Nunes, Teixeira, and looking at the list that you have here, Rudolph Hanamji, a couple others I've spoken to before. We've spoken about Hope. And this, of course, one of the newer, if not the newest, political entities on the horizon. Let me welcome. It is my pleasure to have in studio political leader Timothy Hamill-Smith. Nice to have you with us here.
Yeah, good morning, Satish, and good morning to all your listeners. Very happy to be here with you.
Definitely. We are going to have a robust discussion, but we're definitely going to have more discussions with you on a different level when it comes to the party and what's going on. But this morning, we're here to talk about all things fiscal and our budget as presented by our finance minister. We've had a lot of discussion, raging discussions about all the points, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's sweetheart, whether it's doable, achievable, whether we're in the right direction. As I've done thus far with some of the discussions we've had, let me allow both of you to give us your summaries on what has been said and your views. Let's begin with Nicolai, who's joining us online. Nicolai, tell us, you would have had the opportunity now to digest what the finance minister had to say and all of the comments that have been made after, subsequent to that. Give us your summary on this financial package that was presented.
Sure. Now, over the years, I think like many other people, I have lowered my expectations when it comes to the national budget. Because year after year, we are critical of the budget and we more or less see the same things. We request the same things and we see that the budget truly does not address the needs of the people. There are some things, of course, that will be of great benefit to the citizens of this country. And there are things, of course, that regardless of what should have been in place a while now. But for what it is, I think it is a budget that is very sober, so to say. There is nothing too exciting or out of the box, I think, when it comes to this budget moving forward. Now, one of the big topics, of course, had to do with minimum wage. And we see that there's been an increase of just $3. And I know that the minister went on to explain in some instances, minimum wage workers would be receiving $500 more, and in other cases, $900 more. Of course, we look on now to see what the effect may be when it comes to employers. But hopefully, it's not a situation where we're going to see an impact on prices across the country, and therefore that additional $500 or $900 becomes more or less obsolete because it more or less moves with those price increases. So those are things that we have to be careful for. And of course, digitization. I know that the minister has spoken that there is going to be this huge effort toward digitization across the country. That is something that is extremely welcomed. And to be fair to the government, and I was having this conversation just yesterday or day before, I think that a lot of effort is being made, especially when it comes to the Ministry of Education. But that effort, it's not going at pace with the kind of development that we're seeing. I was speaking to some persons younger than myself who would have benefited from the laptops when they first came out under the People's Partnership government. And really hearing their experience and so forth, it makes me confident that those kinds of initiatives are very important for the growth and development of this country. And it's good to see that the government is going back in that direction. Will it be enough moving forward? Will it take care of that digital gap that does exist? Only time will tell. But those are just some of the initiatives that I think are really important and ones to look forward to. Other things such as revenue authority, collection of property tax, which is a controversial issue, but I am of the opinion that the collection of property tax is important. It's a matter of how we use those funds. Is there transparency? Is there accountability? And the government has gone spoken ad nauseum about the mechanisms that are in place. So I'm looking on, I'm hearing a lot of positive reviews in various quarters. There are some negative reviews, but this is just another budget that personally I think is going to lead us into the budget of 2025 and thereafter and thereafter, and we won't see too many huge differences. So it's a very sober budget in my mind.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. We do have with us, as I said to you, a political leader of this newest political entity, Hope. That's Timothy Hamill Smith. I'd like to speak to you a bit about the party, but as after our discussions, we'll get to that. This budget that was presented has generated, as most do, all kinds of comments. You have, depending on who you ask, basically, you get in, either it's a great budget, it's not that good, it doesn't have some of the economic drivers that we need at this point in time. Give us your opinion, your summary of what our finance minister had to say.
Well, I thought it was an amazing budget, but in a sense, amazing because of its absurdity. Here we are in Trinidad and Tobago on the knife edge. A sense of chaos reigns, crime. We don't know who is in charge. Nobody's taking control of that. And in the midst of that, all we really have is a government throwing money after the problem. I haven't seen anything emerge from the budget which suggests that there is a real plan which would eradicate crime. And of course, the very first requirement of any government is to provide safety and security for its citizens. If you fail to provide that, then you have failed as a government. And people are, you know, entitled to say, well, who is in charge? If you don't have any fresh ideas, any innovative ideas as to how you're going to tackle crime and corruption. And why I highlight that is the problem is that nothing else in the budget, no incentive in the budget, will act as a transformative agent for Trinidad and Tobago unless we fix crime and corruption. Because nobody's going to invest in this environment when, in fact, your home could be invaded, your business attacked, you're being taxed in order to really extort money from people. That is a very alarming situation. And I am amazed that the government have not even made an attempt other than to throw money at the problem. And money is not the answer. You know, I know that at one point it had been said that money is no problem. Mm-hmm. Today, money is the problem. And the problem is that what we do have left merely is thrown out, happy for the police and the fire officers and the public servants who are said, you will get money. But is that going to change the equation? Is that going to change life in Trinidad and Tobago from where we are at the moment to something that we all feel we have a potential to transform Trinidad and Tobago? We have a people, the human resource is of immense value, but you need leadership to change that, to make it, you know, the dynamism that comes and the transformation that follows. Unless we do that now, we're on a precipice and it's business as usual.
Your sentiments echo those expressed by former Energy Minister Kevin Ramnarayan. We had him on the program and he's of the opinion that the nine budgets, well, this ninth one now, as presented by column member, shows that as Minister of Finance, column member thinks that the budget is only a balancing act, an act to balance the nation's finances and nothing more. What you are suggesting is the budget needs to have a greater pulse of or have its finger on the pulse of the nation of what really is needed. And I'm sensing from you that you don't necessarily think that even though the finance minister is patting himself on the back because he is. He issued a tweet, and Colin Member is this kind of individual, patting himself on the back, saying that he's happy he was able to help the less fortunate with the money from back pay, and that he's dealing with the crime situation with the 1,000 extra police officers and all of these things. You don't seem to agree at all.
Well, amazingly, is that going to be the answer? What we're hearing is that the police are, you know, I'm happy for the police that they get funds, but that in some many ways they are part of the problem. That's what we've heard from the Prime Minister himself, that we need to have a squad that is trustworthy and that he wants to create that sort of environment. And in that, all you do is throw money and say we're going to engage more people to do more of the same, to create more chaos. What about the DNA? Have we done anything about the database? Have we provided the police with the tools in order to enhance their detection rate? I mean, not a word. I find that amazing. Have we done anything about the guns and drugs that flow into Trinidad and Tobago? Well, I heard about scanners. That was one, if you like, good move, except that the minister fails to condescend to give us particulars. Mm. So you know, have no idea whether these, what is the capacity and capability of these scanners? Did he mention me? You know, the first thing that happens in Trinidad and Tobago, it will break down within 6 months. And there's no maintenance within that program.
Mm.
Has he mentioned the throughput? If you have containers, if you want to go and scan every single container, and that's fine, that's a good objective, but you only can throughput 25 an hour, then in fact you're going to get a backlog. There will be gridlock in the country because you can't get. So I don't have any idea, because he just says, I threw 90 million at this. Is you know, and for all of these, when you're going to spend that type of money, you're entitled to see from the government a cost-benefit analysis. But we have none of that.
Hmm.
Cal is the same way. I'm going to get new planes. Oh, it sounds good. But is there a cost-benefit analysis? Hmm. Or is this throwing money into a hole, the money that belongs to the public with no accountability, no transparency? Are there not other things that we could be doing in order to eradicate crime? We put forward that you need to look at the firearms, for instance, legislation. We need to create legislation, new cutting-edge legislation, because every single crime almost, certainly all the violent crime, is done at the barrel of a gun.
Mm.
People are shot with a gun.
Yeah. Mr. Edwards, your interpretation, do you believe the budget is out of touch with the realities that the country confronts at this point in time?
Sure. I said that in my earlier statement, where the reality is that what is presented in the budget does not necessarily reflect the thoughts, the desires of the population. Because you see in one instance where minimum wage was raised by just $3, where unions have called for it to be raised to $30 or thereabout. Of course, you would have some economists and persons saying things such as that may be unrealistic. But I take the point from Timothy where essentially better has to be done. There has to be a more holistic approach to the budget, looking at things longer term. And we have to see value for the money that we're putting out. It does seem to be very much a balancing act, trying to get that budget to balance, whether it's next year, the year after. We were able to achieve that at one point during COVID. I believe it is, or just emerging out of it. But it really has to be a budget, I think, where there is citizen participation, where we really prioritize certain initiatives and objectives which we are expected to complete within whether one financial year or across five financial years. But it has to be a budget that is more practical, that the man in the street can get behind, can understand, and can really appreciate. The fact is that when it comes to the budget statement, it's a long statement. It goes on for several hours, and much of the public really tunes out when it comes to that, because they would just wait to see what the highlights are, what the deficit is, how much money we're expected to make, and where the money is going in terms of the different sectors. But that does not do justice to really the kind of spending that takes place during a fiscal year. And I think the population needs to be better educated about this process. And generally, because a lot of the issues that I think Timothy is mentioning has to do with issues or challenges that we as a population have to be a lot more vocal about. It can't be just simply when a budget comes around. There has to be opportunities for the citizens to be able to give their input, to make suggestions, to offer support, and really get behind a lot of the decisions that are being made by the government. And I think that the average citizen feels nowhere close to that experience of being able to be a part of the national conversation when it comes to national development and so forth, because we are mainly seen as electors. We are seen in one sense as electors, and then after the election takes place, we are simply persons, constituents or burgesses, but we are never seen as active participants in the ongoing development of this country. And I think something is very wrong with that. Of course, we need legislative change. We need policy changes to allow for greater participation. Citizen-led governance, I think, is what is lacking here. And when you have that lack of that kind of engagement, you end up with budgets like this, budgets which have its merits, but it's a far cry from where the country wants to head and where the population is willing to lay its support.
I hear this. I mean, we're moving a little bit away from the nitty-gritty of the budget, but we'll get back to that after the 8 o'clock news, because I think this is an important element of the discussion. I hear all the time citizen engagement, the citizen needs to be given more opportunity to participate, and the citizen needs to have greater cognizance of what's going on around them so that they can make informed decisions. Does the citizen really care about all these things? And that's a fundamental question, because on one hand, we can accuse those in authority in an office, whoever they are, just talking about these because they are here. But throughout, do citizens really want to be a part of this process? Do citizens, by and large, want to have an impact in the budget and how the government spends money moving forward? Or is that just a handful of us who are so inclined, and by and large, the population couldn't give two hoots about what happens in the budget unless it's about gas or they raise rum price? What's your opinion? Do we have that level of engagement or the want for that level of engagement from the population?
I think it should never be a question of does the citizen want this, regardless of what, because if we look at elections, for instance, and the outcomes of elections, there's a large segment of the population that does not want the current government in office, and there's a large segment of the population that will not want the opposition in office.
Right.
There are certain fundamental rights and responsibilities of citizens, and whether they want those rights and responsibilities or not, it is enshrined in our constitution. We have the Bill of Rights, and these documents more or less speak to what citizens can expect. And I think it is only fair that when a government is elected, whomsoever has the authority to lead this country must make decisions in the best interest of the population. But for so long, we have taken on board a model where it's like the parent, so to say, or traditional parenting, where you're expected to be the parent to make decisions on behalf of the child, and not in concert with the child, not asking the child, what do you want to be when you grow up, or these are the options, and empowering that child so that one day when he or she becomes an adult, they would have been so empowered and have so much experience that they can contribute and give back in a significant way. As it stands right now, Trinidad and Tobago citizens do not feel so inclined, so empowered, so available to make those kinds of decisions. And what you have is a lot of social decay taking place, a breakdown in social norms and values and so forth, and just generally a sense of inertia. Because if you ask so many young people right now, as much as we're hearing that the minister is saying that unemployment is down to 3%, when you ask people on the ground about their employment situation, while there may very well be some persons in jobs, the reality is that their qualifications are not really commensurate with the kinds of jobs that they are receiving, or the reverse of that. So you have a lot of university-graduated young people across this country, because thankfully we've benefited from GATE, but do they get the opportunity to put that to practice? You find many persons in positions for which they are not qualified, but essentially it's a job and they need a job because they have to survive, and so they take what they get. And I think that's kind of a microcosm of the bigger situation, because as citizens, many of us are simply taking what we get, knowing that we are destined for better, knowing that we can contribute more, knowing that we are of more value. But over time, that messes with your head and you just really fall into the status quo. So I think that people do deserve that kind of public education about budgets. I think that we need to allow people to be more participatory, because we are so excited to get their vote, so interested in who they are willing to vote for and to support when it comes to election. But why are we not so interested thereafter when it's time to do the work? And that's a big problem.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective that you've brought, that even if people don't want to do it, they should have the opportunity available to them. Mr. Hammersmith, we're going to have to ask you to hold your response to that question. I know that you're anxious to answer that one, but we have some messages to take us up to the top to news. So I'll get your response to that question after news. And there are some other very interesting things that we have to discuss about our budget for the next financial year. Was it a sweetener? Is it a sign of things to come heading up to an election? All that and so much more, the increase in the retirement age, there are so many things that we have to discuss. And then, of course, for those of you listening in, feel free to join the conversation. We'll open our phone lines as well. Stay with us.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5. This is the Morning Rumble with Satish Mahabir.
Four minutes after eight, the final hour of our show, we continue our discussion. We do have with us Nikolai Edwards, Timothy Hamill-Smith, and joining our conversation as well, political leader of the PP, Philip Edward Alexander. Good morning to you. Nice to have you with us here this morning. We'll get to your comments in just a bit, include you in the discussion. But before we went to the news, I had asked about engagement, and Mr. Hamill-Smith, let me give you the opportunity to give us your response.
All right. So it's not that we cannot. When it comes to the budget, you have all of the business organizations submitting their recommendations. Likewise, a citizen can be part of an NGO to give those. The question really is, is the government listening? Will any of this, you know, hit home and get integrated? I think more important is that we need to establish independent institutions which have a role, so that if you look back, since the late 80s, a country like New Zealand introduced fiscal responsibility legislation, and that ensured that your budget reflected what targets you were going after. The cost benefit analysis to make sure that these things are implementable, that you kept certain ratios, your debt to GDP ratio, these are managed, as it were. And then we actually had an Economic Development and Advisory Board, but it seems that all of its plans just went into the rubbish bin. We need to have that enacted by statute, so no prime minister can just ignore it. It has to be something laid and debated in Parliament. And so if you had these independent boards, here you have the voice of the people being heard as a counterbalance. Because remember, governments, you know, from their perspective, getting into power is the objective. Winning an election is an objective. If you listen to them, that's their only objective, staying in power or getting into power. And therefore, we have a dire need to have independent institutions, such as a fiscal council, such as the Economic Development and Advisory Board. But there is room for the kind of participation that Nikolai talks about. And what we have suggested is you need to create a citizens' assembly. So, for instance, look at the pension issue that we're facing now. So, really, all the government have done is kick the can down the road. But we are facing a dilemma. Mm-hmm. The day will come when there will not be money to pay the pensions that we've promised people or the disability benefits. And if you don't plan from now, if you wait till the proverbial hits the fan, it's too late.
Mm.
So, yes, citizens need to understand. And so if you created a citizens' assembly where voices of professionals talk to this issue, where the people are allowed to voice their opinions so that you have a consensus type of movement to move people from where they are to an appreciation of where we have to do. This is particularly important in difficult situations like this pension issue.
Mm-hmm.
You see what happened in France, but they didn't do any of that deliberation. And you need to start now. In 2 years' time, it will be too late.
Yeah. Let's bring into our discussion our third guest here this morning, political leader of the PP, Philip Edward Alexander. Nice to have you with us here this morning. Thank you so much for accepting the invitation to be here.
Thank you, Satish. Thank you for having me. Good morning to your panel. Good morning to Nikolai and Timothy. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person. It's just been a busy, busy time. It was my intention to do it, but it didn't happen, and I apologize.
These things we have to deal with. We live in a real world. There's a real life things happen. But it's nice to have you joining us because as I began with my two other guests this morning, I want to hear from you, your summary. Our finance minister has presented a budget that has tongue waggings for many reasons. Some of the provisions, the back pay, the possibility of the retirement age moving to 65, a host of things. I'm sure you'd have a summary of what he presented. Let's get that from you.
But more than giving a summary, I just want to say that the politics of budgeting and the politics of how we run the country and the politics of how governance is done makes it irrelevant. We could drown it and talk. What Timothy mentioned to you earlier scratches the surface. The problems that face Trinidad and Tobago share a common bed, and that bed is the people once voted have no say in how their country is run. And Timothy mentioned that stakeholders would have been allowed to comment on the budget, and people could join NGOs if they want to comment on the budget. We live in a time where you are talking to me on a device that is broadcasting to you via all around the world, utilizing all manner of electronic technology. There are enough apps and tools available that the government, if it wanted to, could engage the population. The government could have run a top 50 hit list. What do you think of this? What's your opinion on that? And give the people a chance to weigh in. Even if it was a virtual vote, you would have known what was important to the public. But instead, we got what was important to stakeholders and that have access to the government's air, and what was important to the government. I want to raise one point. The point of the 1,000 extra police. The Minister of Finance, when he announced that, should have sat down and let the Minister of National Security stand up and explain to the population the science that suggests 1,000 more police are going to make a difference to the crime. Because if you are responding to the crime situation, you spend $108 billion on national security and get nothing with your current police. The entire parliament at different times, the current head of the PCA has said that the police service is a criminal gang. We have a police professional service bureau. We have a complaint division, a complaints authority, and none work. The police service bureau was involved in the arrest of this Thomas fella in Barbados. Trinidad and Tobago is falling apart in the parliament, in the cabinet. And I appreciate your inviting me, and I will touch on issues as much as I can and weigh in on them. But I want to say that the things that need fixing are first the parliament and the cabinet, the way we elect people, the way we keep them accountable, the way government is done. And it is not going to happen as long as two parties, the PNM and the UNC, benefit financially from its failure. So we're going nowhere. So this morning we could talk about the budget, and next week they could open a symposium on crime, and the week after they could talk abortion or hanging or any of the other distracting issues, and we could all weigh in and we could get our names in the papers and on shows like this. But it's going nowhere. And as Timothy said just now, it is going to hit the fan. It's going to hit the fan soon. I watched the number assessment, and I asked one question. I didn't weigh in on anything else. I asked one question post-budget. You said 35.5 or 35.2 billion non-oil revenue. And I asked, where is the breakdown for that? 16 billion is oil, 1.6 billion is capital, something or the other. But 35 billion, I thought maybe taxation. I had a conversation with a panel of my own yesterday, and a senior attorney told me there's no way taxation could contribute $35 billion. So what is this money? Is there any truth to there being this number? Because the budget is predicated on it. So is it really a $5 billion deficit, or is it worse? In a country where we added up the country's combined wealth through the banks and added it to the Heritage and Stabilization Fund and our import cover and said we are in a fortunate position. But what I look at is world data that says with $16 billion US dollars in debt, we have $5 billion US dollars in the Heritage and Stabilization Fund. Money that sits in the banks belongs to the people who have money in the banks. If we had to shut Trinidad down as a business tomorrow, we had about $11 billion US dollars in debt. We're not having that conversation because we're talking about details that we've spoken about for 30 years ad nauseum that has done nothing to fix this country.
All three of you this morning are singing from the same hymn book. And you're all telling me the very same thing that we've been having. These discussions are not new. We've been having them for quite some time. I think it was last week, prior to the budget, I spoke to political analyst Dr. Shane Mohammed, and I don't know if he coined the phrase or whatever else, the politics of economics. And he went into great detail to explain how all the budgets that we've ever had was about political expediency and not about better economics or balancing the books or making sure that the country's business was done with that in mind. Rather, it was done as, in his opinion, and probably others might share it, that what can we put in place to score political points? And how can we use the Treasury to make sure that people feel we're doing the best possible job and would want to keep us in office, which is what Mr. Hammersmith, you said, Nicolai Edwards, you said the same thing, Philip, you're saying the same thing. How can we... And that discussion about changing anything was prominent before local government elections, about getting people to understand that there is the need to change the way things are going because they're not going good. And what we have is this facade that everything is hunky-dory, but when we drill deep down, this country is in debt. Each citizen in this country owes so much money. But as Philip just said, we're not having that conversation. How do we begin to have that conversation? We've seen in other parts of the world where citizens have forced administrations and leaders to take decisive action. Is that pie in the sky for us, or can we get to that? Do people want us to get to that? Who wants to go first?
Well, I mentioned, Satish, that really you do need to integrate into the system mechanisms that provide the checks and balances that we need. And fiscal councils, amazingly, in the late 80s, New Zealand, which today is at the top of every single index, a country of 4 million people, so it's not that much larger than Trinidad and Tobago. But what happened, they hit a crisis. Natural gas for New Zealand, which was basically their sole export, dried up. Not dissimilar to what is happening in Trinidad and Tobago now. What they introduced then was fiscal responsibility legislation, where people have targets to meet, where you have ensure that there's a cost-benefit analysis. You are never just throwing money at a problem. You are finding a solution and demonstrating what outcomes you want to achieve, how much it will cost, and will we benefit at the end of the day? If nobody is doing that, and in this case, what you need is an independent institution. Of course, you know, Dr. Farrell said that governments tend to be allergic to independent institutions. They want to have their own way. They don't want to listen to anybody because, as you indicate, the objective is winning the next election. Power is the name of the game. And that's the only criteria for determining where we put our money as a government. And that has to change. If that does not change, Trinidad will continue to descend. So Jamaica, for instance, which hit the doldrums, you know, one of the remedies they instituted? Fiscal councils with fiscal responsibility legislation. Somebody's having oversight, and having that oversight with teeth to ensure that you keep on a path that you could in fact achieve growth and diversification, because that's what the budget claims to be doing, but falls dismally short of that goal. And I don't think anybody in Trinidad and Tobago believes that this budget will really achieve that objective.
Yeah. Nikolai Edwards, your take.
Sure. I agree that we have to be having a discussion about the steps that are necessary to get to the point, because even with that council that Timothy is speaking about that needs to be put in place, and many of the other changes, the independent institutions and so forth, the reality is that you have to have members of parliament, members of the cabinet, who have the same kind of thinking and who would push for these things. It seems as though those who currently occupy office are not necessarily in support of those decisions, or feel as though that is the approach that needs to take place. So therefore, there needs to be a clearing of house. We have to have persons in those positions who will do right by the citizens of Trinidad and Tobago. How do you get people into those positions? You have elections. And in order to prepare individuals for election, or even to win elections, you have to mount a serious campaign, public education, and so forth. And it comes right back down to the issue of being able to conduct those kinds of campaigns. You have to have resources. So we do have non-governmental organizations, non-profit organizations across Trinidad and Tobago who do excellent work, who put out the data, who put out information, and try to impact on communities and lives on a daily basis. But the reality is, for those kinds of movements and groups and so forth to grow, to become so empowered, there is that dependency right now on funding from ministries and so forth. So you find yourself really in this kind of never-ending circle where you are beholden to the government, to the minister, to these ministries, to get funding to do the kind of work you need in society. But from the time you break out of that mold and you start to really engage in public education that may go against what the government may have in mind or so forth, it becomes a problem. So we do need to see funding streams. We do need to see opportunities. We do need to see the private sector and other well-to-do individuals stepping up to the plate, ensuring that there are resources available to undertake the kind of work that is necessary to bring about this change of thinking across the country. And that, therefore, would lead along all the steps to getting individuals in office. If one had the ability to simply exist outside of government and make the kinds of changes necessary for this country, I think many of us would not really care about politics at all, those who've offered ourselves. But the reality is that we do see a better use for our legislature. We do see a better use for the executive of this country and so forth. And I think it's time that those things be properly articulated by all, so that it doesn't become blinded by or shielded by it's this individual or this personality. We all have to sing the same song, but we also have to be very clear about what is required and follow those strategies. That's the only way we're going to see this citizen participatory governance, or this approach that people feel a lot more valued and a part of the national discussion. Because it comes like, with all due respect, former Prime Minister Basu Pandey, who's been having a lot of conversations over the past couple of years about constitutional reform, but the particular steps, that is, constitutional reform, empower the citizens about their responsibility for bringing about constitutional reform. And therefore, you put people who are mounting campaigns and podiums to run for office to be able to carry that message and that practice all the way into the legislature. So it requires steps. And I think we do know what is required, but we don't have the kind of backing and support to make this a reality.
Mr. Alexander, your take on getting us to some kind of position where citizens have a greater role, a greater say in what takes place.
Sorry, is this me?
Yes.
Well, I agree. I always agree with Nikolai and Timothy. I could say that Nikolai and Timothy could go to interviews 3 weeks from today and they're going to speak, and I'm probably going to agree with what I'm most likely going to agree what they're going to say. Where Timothy and I disagree is he skips a magic step. And that step is, who bells this cat? Who is going to say, let's, as our government that is benefiting from all of this corruption, let us now rein in ourselves and put a fiscal council in place. Who is doing that? The reality, and I do not ever want to stray from this, is that politics has destroyed this country. For whatever reason, we continued our colonial masters' divide and rule race policy into our independence, and it has completely destroyed Trinidad and Tobago. I say that, people don't want to hear that. Every day we get closer to the reality. I'm hearing parliamentarians like Kamla Prasad Misesa, her lips are moving, but my words coming out her mouth, Mariano Brown, Vasan Barat, I'm hearing everybody now saying what I was saying 5 years ago, 10 years ago. They're using my words. I heard Timothy Hammersmith refer to when the Bobar hit the fan. He has to understand, he lives in a world that he leaves out the word, but he used the statement and expects the public to understand what he said. Then he knows that they know what he is saying. And him not saying it is semantics. I'm not drilling down into that. I'm saying that we get caught up in this country in the wrong things. We get caught up in the thick of thin things, to quote Wayne Dyer. And until the people of this country realize, and I don't know if the people are going to realize, I want to use the low voter turnout in the local government election, because I want to say, the politicians, all the parties, worked very hard for that vote. And the people of Trinidad and Tobago have let Trinidad and Tobago down. And that mostly is the reason for my silence. I am not speaking as much on issues. I hear Rudal Molilal and lawyers on the papers. Where's the uproar? Where's the candlelight movement? The only thing they're not doing is actually calling my name, because this one dying and that one dying. And I want to ask them, Rudal, you can't afford a candle. Kamala, you can't go outside the Red House and light one. Everybody waiting for somebody else, usually me, to get the mobilized crowd so they can come and climb up on it and talk about the divers in Paria. I called everybody while the divers were still alive. None came. So I want to say to Trinidad and Tobago, using your media, we the people, and Nikolai and Timothy myself, I want to say that we work very hard at trying to get people to understand the tsunami that is coming to drown this country, because it is coming. And unlike Jamaica and unlike Guyana, when we hit the wall, we are going to be hitting the wall at a time when the world is in chaos and nobody will have time to rescue a country that used to have cocoa, that used to have sugar, that used to have oil, that used to have gas. They have a time for us. We need to get beyond semantics. The voters, the citizens, the taxpayers, the people who cannot go in a bank this morning and get foreign exchange, regardless of all the nonsense the people in Parliament talking. Because the $32 billion that came in from the sale of oil and gas in 2022, somebody got that foreign exchange. They didn't pay Trinidad in toilet paper and they didn't pay us in TT. They paid us in foreign currency. Somebody benefited from that. They go into certain businesses and the shelves are packed with imported stuff. We have more fast food outlets per capita than any country in the world, and all of those fast food outlets require royalties and direct financial feedbacks to parent companies in foreign currency. When they talk, Trinidadians need to understand the science behind, I just want to use the example of the police again. The science says 225 police per 100,000 is an ideal scientific ratio. That means Trinidad should have 3,250 police. Right now, we have 6,500, which means we have actually 100% more police than the science says we need to manage crime. We're going to add a next 1,000 to that without saying why. And the PNM supporters will say, my party say it, so it's good. The UNC supporters will say, my party do agree. And you watch it and you see it. People get angry when I call them out on their track record. People, Gary Griffith, trying to make a mockery and call me PNMBT. I said, you can't join the UNC now. 3 months ago, you told the Joint Select Committee that Tamla Prasad Misesa was trying to destabilize the country. You can't. Tamla Prasad Misesa can't be telling the country Gary's an expert on crime. She fired him. When she fired Timothy Hammersmith, I was there. She fired Gary as Minister of National Security. When Pete Rowley went to make Gary Commissioner, her expert on crime, she didn't support him. The people of Trinidad and Tobago have to hold these politicians to account. And if the PNM and the UNC failed you, you have people like Nikolai and you have people like myself and even people like Timothy, because Timothy has not been as political as he was, even though he was a president of the Senate. I'm saying to Trinidad and Tobago that voting race is killing your children and your grandchildren.
Okay.
Taking $500 on a jersey and a hamper at election time, selling your next 5 years of life for a plate of food today is insanity. And until the people of Trinidad and Tobago wake up to the reality of their responsibility, because you have strong lions in the Guyana now. I am not an easy person to debate. Nikolai is not an easy person to debate. Timothy Hammersmith brings more factual information about politics and the way the country should run and could run than just about anybody. You have good people out here. And if the voters, I don't want you to come out and protest, light no candle, burn no tire, help no stone. I just want you to vote. I want you to use what you have as an opportunity to defend yourself and defend the country. And until people ready to do that, we can sit down here today and tell you line item by line item about everything that was wrong in that budget. We're not going to make a difference, because one side will defend it, the other side will kick it, it'll go nowhere.
Yeah.
That's where we are again today.
Let's take a couple of calls. It's 8:30. 627-3223, 625-2257. If you've joined the conversation late, our guests here, Timothy Hammersmith, Nikolai Edwards, and Philip Edward Alexander. That's who's with us. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Zatish. Good morning to Mr. Smith and Mr. Dressa, I guess.
Good morning.
I agree 99% of what these gentlemen are saying. They have brought up the root of the problem here in this country. I thought that the budget was just a same old, wish and hope kind of budget. and they pacify the population, their supporters, and the people even who don't like them with the little back pay and the little $1,000 grant that they give the school children. And I want to ask the three gentlemen, especially Mr. Alexander, and this is a serious question, because I think it might be needed for people to put the pride aside for betterment of country. Would you gentlemen be open, especially Mr. Alexander, to join under a charter of, how to put it, a charter of understanding or concessions with the UNC in order to take power from this government to enact constitutional reform? I'll listen off it.
Yep. Hold the responses to that question. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish. Take power to do what? Good morning, gentlemen, Mr. Alexander and Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, I listened to your discourse earlier on when you joined the program, and I kind of get the feeling that we may be on the same wavelength, that the parliament needs to step in to deal with the situation of crime in the country. I wonder, have you ever advocated to the legitimate opposition that they need to put country first, forget about making the PNM look bad, and go to the parliament and vote for legislation such as we deal with the polygraph police officers, we have a whistleblower legislation, we need a robust authority. All these things are important and imperative. We have to find time. We have a situation whereby we should be employing at least one in every we want to fight crime. How can we do that without the authority? I listen to your comment.
Unfortunately, a lot of your call there broke up. I don't know if you got a gist of the question that he was asking. The first caller spoke on the issue of joining forces, and the second caller, he spoke about parliamentary overtures and people in parliament working together to deal with some of the issues that we have. Let's start with you, Mr. Hammersmith. Let's get your responses.
Certainly, as a political party, hope is willing to engage anybody to come to some sort of consensus as to what is required. I can't predetermine whether another party will move towards what I think is achievable. Certainly we understand what initiatives need to be commenced in order to achieve the objective of eliminating crime. I'm happy to share that with anybody. The question at the end of the day is, what will other people say? I mean, the way that Mr. Alexander puts it is, who bells the cat? And who bells the cat is the electorate. They are the ones. And they decide either, we're fed up, we can't take this anymore, we need fresh ideas brought to the table that really seem have the capability of transforming the country, of eradicating crime, of eradicating corruption. And we certainly think we have those ideas, and we're willing to talk on any platform as we are here today.
Mm.
And we're willing to talk with any party who wants, because at the end of the day, you need unity in Trinidad and Tobago. No country in no part of the world ever succeeds without a critical mass of people following a common vision. And therefore you need 60 to 70% of the people saying, yes, we want this, we will do this. Right now, we're basically divided 50-50 in terms of the electorate. And so where does a country go? And yes, we have to unify, and it's our job as politicians, as political parties, to capture the imagination of the people. And that's why hope comes to the table and says, we will present to you, and you determine, can we make a difference? We believe so. We believe we'll make the difference in 2025. And that is the timing we have before us as to whether we will succeed, whether we'll transform. And your other
you know, your other caller raised the question of, would we persuade, I think he's saying, the UNC to support? And it sounds very much like all I've heard the government talk about is beginning bail legislation. We want support for that. But what is being presented is, in a sense, very unjust. What we have to do is tackle the criminal justice system. You can't put a man in bail, hold him there for 10 years, and then find that he's vindicated. He's found not guilty, but he spent 10 years in jail. Is that justice? If you don't fight for justice, how will you ever have peace in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody Correct. Will stand by and allow injustice to occur. And I think the PNM are barking up the wrong place in terms of bail legislation.
Let's hear from
could,
the,
could I jump in there? Because I want to answer a couple of things Timothy said.
Sure.
The PNM is barking up that tree because the UNC barked up that tree when the UNC was in office. They both bankrupt of ideas. They both want to lock up the cockroaches and leave them languishing in jail. We have a justice system where Vernon de Lima told me that there are people in jail on charges for murder that can't see the inside of a court for the next 4 years. We don't have a timer on our court matters. Cases could run for 100 years. There's nothing to say, hey, how is this case running 100 years? I want to give you two examples. A little girl, 17 years old, was raped in a police station by the ranking police officer. Took 17 years to prosecute. 17. We have an incident in the country. We have our largest corruption case in our history. Cost this country hundreds of millions of dollars. We have the benefit of co-conspirators being convicted and jailed in foreign jurisdictions as evidence that it did occur. And neither the Chief Justice, nor the DPP, nor anybody of any value or substance in the justice food chain has ever had to account to the people of Trinidad and Tobago. If ever they pass that bail bill, they have this joke about chicken was running and they ask him why you're running. He say they're locking up pigs. And they say, but you're not a pig. He say in Trinidad court, you know how long it take to prove that? That's our problem. All of these things, not a little bit. And I want to say to Timothy, his party Hope is a brain trust. It reminds me of the new Tapia movement. I love Steve Alvarez, Louis Lee Singh, Timothy Hammersmith, and now you have Karen Nunes, the sheriff. I mean, you have some strong minds. But you have to also get the politics on the ground. And when you ask about those two callers, it made my point. A PNM caller called him to ask Timothy if he ever tell his party to support, because they still assume Timothy supports the UNC. You ever tell your party to support the government of the mainland? And the next caller called and asked if we would give strength to the UNC and help the UNC get in office. And I wonder what those two callers see when they close their eyes. The second caller think that the UNC, because they're Indian and represent all of the Indian people in Trinidad and Tobago, have a right to be the opposition? Or do they not want people who are the best people, regardless of race, in the parliament? Because if he wants that, the UNC no longer is part of that equation or that question. They have failed miserably twice. And there's enough evidence. I have to go into that. The PNM has failed miserably forever, but they counterbalance each other in an unholy alliance of failure to the people. They're not failing themselves. They're not failing their finances. Those people are wealthy beyond measure, but they're failing the people of Trinidad and Tobago. And as long as those callers see their race first, we're going nowhere.
Nicola, let's get your responses.
Sure. I really dislike the idea that many citizens feel as though in order for the individuals who can make a difference, the next generation of leaders, the individuals who would know what is necessary to be done when it comes to the legislature, the executive, have to join with either of the PNM or the UNC as political parties in order to make that possible. It really baffles me because at the end of the day, it shows that we don't have confidence in our own ability. It shows that we don't have confidence as a population, that there can be those among us who can rise to the occasion, who can get the support necessary in order to really be a transformative leader. And it's really sad. Because the reality is, if for years we have been complaining about the People's National Movement and the United National Congress occupying office interchangeably and making decisions that do not sit well with the population, then why are you asking for individuals who are completely clean of that kind of track record and so forth to partner with the same organizations, the political organizations that have not done right by this country? It just really baffles me. As I articulated a bit earlier, what we really need is the resources. We have to see those among us who can lead, who can bring forth the ideas. We can't just see them as individuals who, okay, you know, I see you on TV the other day, or I read about what you were saying in the papers, and I really like what you said and appreciate it. We have to move beyond that. Show how you can support those individuals entering office and making the difference. But while that is taking place, we have to have the population holding those current office occupiers to account. We allow too much nonsense to take place in this country, and we sit by, we're seeing the crime rate really spiraling out of control. Many people, and this is not a now issue, so it's not to say that only in 2023 we're seeing these kinds of homicide rates and so forth. This has been happening in Trinidad and Tobago. When we look at even Guyana, when you compare the murder rate, the homicide rate to Trinidad and Tobago, cognizant of the fact that they have a smaller population, the fact is that we see right next door, so to see, differences in terms of cultural expectations and how things pan out. Why can't we look around and employ strategies? And we have the University of the West Indies. We have the University of Trinidad and Tobago. People are graduating with criminology degrees. People are graduating with all kinds of programs that can add to the fight against crime and for a better society. Are we really leaning on those individuals? We want to talk about value for money. We're in budget season. We want to talk about where our money is going. Are we getting value for it and so forth? I do not think that in its current form we are getting value for money when it comes to the GATE program. Now, what I mean by that is not because allowing young people or persons across this country to gain an education would not see value at the end of it. It's what you have set up after that that will see the value coming forth. And we do not have proper streams for persons to go along in order to get employment. And I'm not saying that the government, and I've never said it, that the government is responsible for creating jobs, but the government is responsible for creating opportunities by really shaping an ecosystem where everyone has a fair chance of thriving. That currently does not exist. There are attempts to it, but clearly the process, procedure, protocols being used by the government to achieve those things are not working good enough. And this is where you lean on academics. This is where you lean on the NGOs. This is where you lean on all these social partners to really come up with a formula and a strategy for engagement and to satisfy the needs of the population. That is lacking. And just to come right back to the point, I do not see it necessary for alternative political organizations, leaders, independents, whomsoever, all those persons under one umbrella, I do not see it necessary for them to join up with either the UNC or the PNM in order to make a difference. What we have to do is change hearts and minds. We need the resources, the support, and that's human resources, financial resources, and otherwise, in order to get our message out there across society, build that movement, and you would see how quickly we can really bring about change in this country. But too much is in disarray, too many people that are not even being properly heard or ventilated. And so we feel as though we have more differences than what we have in common. And I think unless we're able to treat with that, we'll continue to spin, unfortunately, top in mud.
Satish? Yes.
Sorry, I need to contradict Nikolai. Could I?
Sure, go ahead.
But I don't want it to get lost. Something he just said. Could I go ahead?
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Let me hear what you have to say.
When Nicolai said it is not the government's job to provide jobs, I want to tell him he's 100% wrong. That is the government's, probably its most important job. To the people in Trinidad and Tobago, they need jobs, they need homes, they need credit in the economy, somebody securing the nation, providing utilities and maintaining the infrastructure. If you could do that, get out of their way and let them live their lives. But jobs is massively important. Jobs is job one. The government supposed to be providing high quality jobs. The job market supposed to be competing with all the people who are out there in jobs now and trying to get them to leave the company they're working with for better and give them opportunities and hope to develop themselves. We need jobs and home ownership in this country as the two pillars of indicators that the economy is actually working. We have drug money and all the billions, the trillions that were stolen corruptly in this country, hidden in real estate. They should publish the rolls for the property tax. There are people in this country that own hundreds, plural, of houses. That can't explain how. We are in a dire strait in Trinidad and Tobago because people don't even understand what government job is. We vote in party. We don't know why. Government job is to come and explain to you that all our roads collapse. We have roads in this country that the Americans built in a hurry for World War II that are 100 years old now and they lasted. But we built roads 10 years ago that collapsing. And I told the nation, there are people in this country who have big positions and big degrees behind their name that should make a jail for signing off and paying contractors for building roads without foundations, without retaining walls. And when you go and look at the sinkholes now, what you see is mud and pitch on top. And there is no accountability. And there is nobody to put anything in place. Timothy talked fiscal accountability. There should be infrastructural accountability. But there should be accountability for if you have a job and you sign off on something that you know in your heart, or even if you don't know it in your heart, if you have no ethics, but it contradicts the science of your discipline of what you are managing, if it contradicts that, there should be some organization that will bring you to account. There's nothing like that in Trinidad and Tobago. We need to redevelop this country. I hear people throwing this word transform. Transform from what? A caterpillar into a butterfly? We need to reboot this republic. We need to go back to September 1st, 1962, when they pulled on the Union Jack to raise the red, white, and black. We need to see what exactly was the plan. Because that's not working. And we need a new plan. I don't want to use UE. Nicolai want to use UE. I don't trust UE. I don't trust the people who are managing it. I don't trust any of the political appointees in this country, and I'm not making excuses. It is time the people, 1.4 million people of Trinidad and Tobago, share this idea that race voting going to protect them and start voting for people who will shake this tree to its roots and
well, I was about to interrupt you because we are out of time. We just have a couple minutes again, and it will not be, you know, because we have commercial obligations to take us up to the top of the hour. Tosca, really, she here standing up over my shoulder, can't wait for me to get out of this chair already. So it was a spirited discussion, gentlemen, and the of course, while we focused on the budget and some of what was presented in the budget, there's a deeper conversation that we start. Well, we didn't really necessarily start it yet this morning, but we definitely built on it. And that is how we do things in this country, why we do them, and are we doing them for the betterment of the country moving forward. And that's a deeper discussion that touches all the notes that we could possibly play on talk programs like these and national discussions. But this is where we're going to have to drop the curtains on the interview. We are going to have further installments of what started here this morning. And I'm pleased that we had all of you brutally honest telling us your opinion on what transpired in the parliament when it comes to the budget and what continues to take place on a national landscape when it comes to governance, leadership, and all the things that are so, that sound so pretty when you have these discussions, but definitely drill down to, is the country heading where it needs to go? And are we putting measures in place to take us there? Mr. Timothy Hamill-Smith, thank you so much. Nikolai Edwards, always a pleasure. Philip Edward Alexander, always nice to have you with us. All three gentlemen, thank you all for being with us here this morning. It was my pleasure having this discussion with you all.
Thank you, Satish, and thank you for inviting Hope. We're very glad to be here.
Oh, we'll definitely have another discussion. We will, definitely. And Nikolai, always a pleasure to have you, and Philip as well. Always nice to have both of you as well.
Thank you, Satish. Thank you to the rest of the panel. Thank you to the listeners.
And this is where we drop the curtains, ladies and gentlemen.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.